Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome, everyone, to Rock M Nation Podcast. This is a brand new episode of Dive Cuts. It is Season 6, Episode 7, and we are here to talk all about your Missouri Tigers and their basketball program. I am your host, Sam Snelling, and we have a special guest. So with me, as always, is Matt, good Matt Harris from Indiana, the plains of Indiana and Indianapolis. He survived the hordes of children in his neighborhood for Halloween last night. Joining us to talk all about the SEC is friend of the pod, Nashville native, and our good friend Blake Lovell. Blake, how are you?
Yes, doing well, guys. Good to talk to you as always. Obviously, a lot more pep in my step this season because of your new head coach, and so I'm pretty excited that we're actually about to tip off the season, and go Dennis Gates.
Yeah, I probably should have added an intro for you that included that you've been accused of being his agent or amongst other things, but definitely a fanboy of our new head coach.
Oh, good to hear. I would just like to point out I've been pushing Dennis Gates well before he got the Missouri job. So because I was, again, I'm the guy that talked to him. I'm pretty sure I'm the first guy he talked to when he wasn't recruiting in that first week span at Cleveland State where he put a roster together in about 8 minutes. But I remember those days, and he's come a long way since then. Now makes his way to Columbia there. So good for him.
Well, Matt, you doing okay? I know we kind of cut off your normal musings, and you are alive after Halloween.
I am alive. In our neighborhood, 450 pieces of candy later. All the children were very polite, very kind, and gracious. So I'll give them credit for that. But, I'm about at the point where I'm tired of looking at video cutups and spreadsheets, and we need actual basketball games to start. So talking season's almost done, and we get live hoops in a week, so that's going to be great. I'm looking very, very forward to actual games and not retrospective looks, but actually evaluating real teams doing things in real time.
Well, so we're basically going to run through the entire SEC, so I don't want to dawdle too much. There is still kind of a lot going on in the last week here. Blake, you're one of the guys that I send the picks out to on an annual basis. Everybody kind of goes through and does their their game by game picks. Matt also filled one out. I filled one out. And so I figure we would kind of talk about our tiers of teams, kind of go through what we sort of view as like the bottom tier. We can kind of rip through those quite a bit, and then maybe talk about the middle tier, and then, you know, try to figure out maybe who's going to end up on top of the league. That sound like a good plan?
Yep.
So yep. I'm only going to go based on KenPom and Blake's picks.
Oh, boy. For starters, keep in mind, I did these picks about a month and a half ago, and I just want to tell you, I have changed my stance on a couple teams. So I want to point that out because I remember who I picked last, and I remember who I had a bit higher than I wanted to have them. But other than that, I think everything's still close to where I want it. So.
Well, I think we're all in general agreement on kind of like how the league is going to lay out. There may be like a little nitpicky here and there, but overall, you know, like everybody knows, like, you know, Tennessee, Kentucky are going to be really good. Arkansas is probably going to be really good. Just so much talent on that team. Alabama has a ton of talent. Auburn returns a bunch of their guards. Florida is always at least decent. LSU's kind of remaking their program with a little bit of an experiment. Texas A&M is expected to be NCAA bound again this year for the first time. Under Buzz Williams, is that going to be Buzz's first trip if they make it this year?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And so then we kind of get to the Mississippi schools who, you know, can kind of be hit and miss. Georgia, South Carolina are most likely our bottom rung teams. Vanderbilt seems to be kind of all over the map, depending on who you talk to. So let's start with that kind of bottom slate. So I'm specifically kind of talking about Georgia and South Carolina. I think South Carolina's roster looks horrible. GG Jackson is obviously an NBA draft talent. But I think for South Carolina to be anything other than horrible, he would need to be like top five good. And I don't know that he's top five good yet.
I'll let Blake take the first crack at this roster.
Oh boy. I don't have a lot to say.
They have an exhibition game recently and like got beat by Charlotte or somebody.
Is this right? I've got to look this up while you're saying it. Cause you know, as you're speaking, I'm somehow keeping up with Georgia and Georgia College right now. So this is a fitting time to be able to talk about these teams. I'm going to find this in a second, but I don't, South Carolina to me is, you know, again, if you're asking me right now, I'm picking them last. I just don't think there's a lot to, I just don't think there's a lot beyond him. You kind of said it, like, there's not a lot of proven, it's just not a deep roster. I'm trying to be nice here, but like I don't see a lot of depth on this roster. I don't see a lot beyond him in terms of comparing it to other teams, right? It's not always just what you have. It's how do you compare to the rest of the teams? And to me, I think their roster does not compare as well to every other team in the SEC.
I mean, they've got Hayden Brown, who I think is probably, you know, people are going to look a lot at Michi Johnson, you know, an Ohio State transfer, former four-star kid. But he got recruited over twice, and including in the portal. Never been really all that efficient of an operator. Like, I think you get to a point where if you see a guy who's been at a place for 2 years and then moves on and goes to a substantially worse program, I'm a little bit skeptical that guy's going to suddenly turn into an elite guy that can elevate you. I think that means he could become like a replacement level or a solid point guard for them, but a guy who can sort of push them higher than expected. I'm skeptical about that. You know, Benjamin Bozeman's Verdonk could never really kind of break through Illinois. And, you know, so if those are the two guys that you're bringing in from the P5 level, you know, I don't know if you've got, you know, guys who you can really plug in and say, okay, we've got three definitive high major guys around our, you know, lottery pick. You know, Hayden Brown played at the Citadel. I watched the Citadel a couple of times in the spring when Missouri was recruiting a guard from there. And, you know, he's 6'5". He's kind of a bully ball type, you know, undersized four, but he's got some pretty good skill. He can handle a little bit. He can, you know, facilitate, you know, in handoffs and run some pick and roll stuff. He can step out and shoot it a little bit. You know, he's going to look a little wonky, I think, sometimes, you know, but you could kind of play him around in some lineups there, and he's pretty efficient. But after that, it's just, you know, you're really needing Jacoby Wright or Chico Carter to, you know, take a step forward here. It's just, there's hard for me to look at this roster and see, you know, who's a clear second, third guy, much less, you know, fourth, fifth or sixth guy in this lineup. It's just, it's really hard to go through and put a pin in anyone and say that guy should be pretty good and pretty reliable for them each night out. And I fear that Gigi's going to hit a wall in February just from high usage and having to carry this team most nights.
Yeah, I just, you kind of go up and down the roster, and I mean, that just, it's difficult to sort of see where, you know, everyone's going to win at least a couple games. Like, I don't see anyone really kind of doing what Vandy did a few years ago when they just went 0-for in league play. So I think, you know, South Carolina's got some opportunities to kind of catch some teams, but I sort of think like 5 wins is probably their ceiling. You know, again, unless Gigi just becomes like the absolute best player on the floor most nights, and even that may not be enough for them to win more than 5 games. Georgia, on the other hand, is interesting to me. I don't think they're going to be good, but I don't hate what Mike White did. So we've never been the biggest Mike White fans at Rock'em Nation. Sort of feel like he's really underachieved a lot of years at Florida. I don't necessarily think he's a bad coach. And, you know, we're kind of talking before the podcast of like doing one thing and then changing up what you do, you know, once you kind of get the next job. And White went out, he kept the guys that made Georgia okay at times last year, and like Kari Okendo, Braylon Bridges, you know, Jalen Ingram was decent. He imported, you know, Terry Roberts, who our friend at Data Mizzou, Matt Watkins, is a big fan of, and Justin Hill. I was really kind of impressed, like when I started kind of looking into to Hill and his numbers and what he was able to do. Then you sort of fill in with guys like Juzwan Holt, and maybe Abdur Rahim kind of puts together. You have Moncrief, the transfer from Oklahoma State, and Frank Anselm, the transfer from Syracuse, who are both very long and athletic guys who can defend. I still don't think they're going to be great, but I certainly think that they're this is a better, more coherent roster than what South Carolina has.
Yeah, I mean, and they can't be. There's no way they can be as bad defensively as they were last year.
Yeah, no
that's
way.
A step. And the thing for Mike White is like, I mean, you can't really underachieve at Georgia at this point, because, you know, after last year, I don't even think that's possible. I think I've said many times, like, I think it was actually a good hire given the context of where things are at for Georgia, because if you're just looking for somebody that can just get you back to not bottoming out as a program, I think Mike White will be fine enough to do that. You know, beyond that, I don't know. You know, again, we were laughing before we started recording about guys who kind of change how they play. It was just such a difference, right, for Mike White, like going from Louisiana Tech to Florida, and it's just like the style of play changed dramatically. And I'm kind of curious, you know, how do they play at Georgia? Like, what are they going to try to do? Because I think that's one of the more interesting aspects of them if you're looking for storylines heading into the season, outside of the fact that, as we speak, guys, at halftime in Athens, Georgia 33, Georgia College 27. So that's worth noting as well. But I like the roster more than I thought it would. I'm just going to be honest with you. Like, I expected to come in and be like, well, you know, they're going to easily finish bottom two, but they may still, but like, I still think they're going to win some games because I think there's enough talent there. It's just, you know, I think a guy like Ingram coming off of what, the torn ACL. And
yeah.
I just think defense, like, to me, that's it. Like, you got two guys coming back that can score, but I think we know what Mike White expects, and his best teams at Florida, they were very efficient on the defensive side of the floor. And I think that as long as he can get that out of the rest of the group, they'll win some games.
Yeah, I think I was sort of surprised just to see how much the pace throttled down and how quickly they kind of abandoned, you know, smart pressure when he got there. And, you know, part of it I wonder is, if does he feel like to recruit the caliber of kid that he needed to, you know, did he feel like he had to compromise in some spaces there and, you know, kind of go away from just, you know, what had made him successful in the first place? Does going to Athens, where I think, you know, the expectations are going to be a little bit less onerous on him? Is that going to, you know, free him up to kind of go back to doing what he does best? He's got guys on this roster who are really long, really athletic. And I think if you want to get into kind of a more pressing-based system and you want to try and ramp up the pace, you could do it with this roster. And you've got guys, I think, who are going to be comfortable at that, playing at that tempo. You know, you mentioned a guy like Roberts, who I think, you know, is going to be, you know, okay at that speed. It'll be interesting to see if, you know, some other guys who, you know, played at a little bit more of a controlled pace, like a Mardrez McBride, are good there. But I think if you just look at the skill sets that he's brought in, you know, McBride was a really, really great spacer, even though he's undersized at North Texas. You know, Juzwan Holt, you know, was a guy who was billed as a good floor spacer. So now you've got some guys that can open the floor up and let Roberts kind of play off the dribble, let Okindo kind of play off the dribble. You know, you can kind of move the defense a little bit and make things easier for a guy like Braylon Bridges. Maybe that helps Frank Anselm find some roles there. So I think they can, they've got some pieces there to where I think that they can play kind of the style that, you know, made Mike, you know, a rising star in this profession. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see. I just think that there's some pieces here that if the fit's right, you know, I've seen them consistently, you know, in 13th or 14th. Do they get 10th or 11th? You know, that's, that sounds still, you know, pretty, like pretty small, modest hope, but I think that's really what they need in year one, is just to come in and see that they can kind of, you know, make some tangible progress going forward. And I think particularly for this staff, you know, if you're going to try and, you know, compete and recruit, you know, in the Atlanta market, where I think Auburn pretty much can walk into McEachern or can walk into some parts of Atlanta and get whoever they want, you've got to show some competence and show that you can put a, you know, a product on the floor that's going to, you know, make it viable for you to get in the argument for some local talent there. But this, as far as a patchover roster, this looks better than what I thought it was going to be when they hired him. And, you know, I don't know long-term what his ceiling's going to be, but maybe there's some hope this year that you can sort of avoid the seller and give yourself just a little bit of momentum to try and go in and into the 24 cycle and get the roster really where you need it to be here.
So the next team that I want to kind of quickly talk about here is Vandy, you know, because Blake, you were kind of hinting that there's a team that you like a lot more than where you picked them. And your original pick had them last. I there were a lot of people actually that filled this out that had them last. And I was actually kind of surprised by that, mainly because if you read my Vanderbilt preview, you probably understand that I have a bit of a love affair with Jerry Stackhouse and his ability to coach and get his guys to kind of do what he wants them to do. He doesn't always have the talent, you know, but I don't think there's necessarily a better coached team in the SEC than what Vanderbilt has put on the floor the last couple of years. They lose Scottie Pippen Jr., who was a massive usage hoarder, basically. I mean, the guy ate like 35% of their possessions. So that's a big loss. And in my preview, I was actually kind of advocating for them to do something that I hardly ever do with college basketball, and that's play big. If Liam Robbins is healthy and Quentin Melora Brown is you know, playing like he's capable of, a really good defensive big, Miles Stute is a guy who I really like as sort of an efficient, you know, floor spacing sort of combo forward. You know, Jordan Wright sort of flashed for some real ability. If they have a solid, reliable point guard, and that's, you know, that's a group that if you play big can be really, really tough defensively and probably not bad offensively.
Yeah, they are the team I was hinting at. Said I had them last. I picked them to win three games. I like their upside much more than several teams, I think, even in front of them. I think that's it. Like, to me, it's, you know, being a Nashville guy and seeing this over the years, it's just, I think you're always looking at Vanderbilt and you're like, all right, what's about to go wrong with them? Because it's, you know, they've had injuries year after year after year. And it's like, you're always relying on one thing. Like, it's that one thing goes wrong, like your upside is done. Like, there's not enough full, you know, there's not enough pieces there, I guess is the best way to put it. Even though, like you said, I agree with you. I think player development and actually getting the most out of his guys, I think that's one of Jerry Stackhouse's best qualities. Like, he's proven he can do that. So I think even without Pippen, I'm very intrigued because I do think Jordan Wright will obviously be better. I think some of these other guys, you mentioned Robbins, they've got a lot of size on that team. I think that's something too with this. They're a very big team, and they've got the freshman Dort. I think he's going to be really good. I think it's just really getting the most out of those guys that have just sort of been the role guys to this point. And, yeah. You know, I don't know. I mean, what? I mean, we're talking about guys like Trey Thomas and, you know,
Lawrence.
Yeah, like those kind of guys, I think, are, because we always say, like, you know, 1 through 5 are, I think 1 through 5, they're probably a little bit better than people think. But yeah. Beyond that, you know, I still think you need some pieces that can come in and help you. You know, it's not always necessary, I guess, but I think that's probably my question with them. But I think the freshmen, especially Dort, you know, again, you've got good size there. And I think it's just a matter of how different it's going to look, right, without Scottie Pippen, someone who just had the ball in his hands so much these past couple of years.
And Ezra Manjohn, you know, I think had some good assist and steal numbers, but not really the most efficient scorer. But I think I buy him a little bit more as a point guard if he's not having to come and empower that offense and he can offload some of those possessions. I think he could be a guy who can give you, you know, some solid numbers night in and night out and really get them into good stuff and move the ball where it needs to go. But, you know, I'd say 1 through 6, they look like a team to me that could get back to the NIT, but it's, you know, where do you go after that? And, you know, what's sort of the depth piece can look like? You know, Noah Shelby, you know, was a guy who was, you know, a top 100 kid who slipped a little bit. Same with Dort. You know, Colin Smith's a guy, you know, who's got really intriguing tape. But those guys aren't ones that I think you would want to have really fill in, you know, spots 6, 7, 8 as freshmen. They really need Thomas and Lawrence to come along and really round out some backcourt depth for them. If they can get that, I think that they could maybe sneak into the bubble picture if things break right for them. But will that happen? I don't know. But there's enough there with, you know, when I watch Wright, Stute, and, you know, Malor Brown, those guys are good enough defensively. They've got, and they operate efficiently when the ball comes to them. And Jerry runs really, really great stuff. I think anybody who follows anybody that really breaks down scheme is going to tell you that Jerry's running really, really great stuff. He just, does he have the depth? Does he have the number of bodies to get this team to the point where it's an NIT or a bubble team? We'll see, but I don't hate them. I think people are sort of undervaluing what they have.
Well, let's talk about somebody that we do hate, or at least apparently I do. So in my picks, I ended up with Mississippi State last. I don't necessarily think they're going to finish 14th, but I really don't like the makeup of this roster. And the main reason is because I'm a big believer that you need good guards in order to be effective. I don't like their guards. If you look at, like, the front court with, like, you know, Tolu and DJ Jeffries as a defensive player, even Cameron Matthews is kind of a specimen.
Yeah,
it's solid. Like I'm a Tolu Smith fan. I think he's a really good player, but the backcourt is like a mess to me. And I'm not really sure they got guys who can shoot the ball, who can space the floor and create enough room for Tolu to really get anything done.
I don't buy DJ Jeffries as a 3-and-D wing. I think
If you want your 3-and-D wing to shoot 29.7%, Matthew, he's perfect.
As his volume's gone up, his shooting, I would have understood it if you'd said freshman year, 3-and-D wing guy, you know, 39% on 41 attempts. What happens? Well, we doubled it, and he went down to 35%. All right, we're at 70 attempts. What happens? Most reasonable floor spaces are probably going to be about 90 attempts or 3 a game. When you got him to 3-and-D kind of spacing volume, he shot 29%. Like that blows a hole in the idea. And then if you look at it even against top 100 teams, he shot 20%. Like, if the theory is that DJ Jeffries is going to be able to keep, you know, teams from collapsing on Tolu, he can't shoot 20% against the teams you're going to see night in, night out in this league. Shaquille Moore's never really been an efficient, you know, distributor. Sean Davis, I mean, I guess you could put some stock in what he did, you know, at Oregon State last year. But even then, I'm looking at the efficiency numbers. The effective field goal percentage is 47. The O rating is 99. And against top 100 teams, it's 92. There's just, I think if you look at counting stats, you might go, yeah, there's something here. But I think once you dig into it, it's like, well, the two guys who have to pass the ball aren't that efficient. And the guy who's your floor spacer bricks most everything he puts up. It's just, it's really hard for me to buy that those are going to be your frontline guys that are going to get it going for you. No matter how brilliant Chris Jans is, and no matter how much I respect Chris Jans, I just don't think he's got the guards to go out there and really be successful night in and night out. I'm sorry I cut Blake off, but
no,
I don't buy these guards whatsoever.
Well, you're going to say, exactly. Look, I'm a big Chris Jans fan, and I think that he was a good fit there. Absolutely. But I think kind of what Sam said, I love Tolu Smith. I think he's a good player. Beyond that, I mean, I think there's some good pieces here, but I just don't know how the pieces are going to fit together. And I've said this half jokingly, but like, I'm looking at everybody else's roster, and this could be the worst shooting team, not just in the SEC, but like, you know, I don't know where that production comes from on the perimeter. Like, that's the thing I wonder about with them. And if, you know, are they having to win games, I don't know, 60-58? I think that's probably the most. I mean, I don't see this team as kind of that breakout scoring type team. And, you know, because again, I think your best player is the guy in the front court that somebody's got to get the ball to. And, I just don't know kind of what that looks like from the backcourt standpoint, because I think you just got a lot of pieces, but I don't know who, you know, winds up being the breakout, who winds up being the disappointing. Like, I think there's a lot of unknowns with the backcourt. And like I said, I just think we don't forget, but like Iverson Molinar and like all the things that he did there. And, you know, now you've got a lot of new faces.
Skylar Mays as my most underrated guy.
Like, it's just like, man, you forgot how good he was, right? Like, and it's now you're like looking at the roster like, oh yeah, he's not there anymore. And so I just don't. My expectations are probably not as low on them being like last or anything, but I think if their ability to find some offense, I can't say I'm exactly confident on at the moment. So,
well, I've pulled this up here. Jameel Horton had a 82.8 points per possession at Albany and a -2 points per 100 possession net rating. Eric Reed, 2 points per 100 possession net rating. You know, Deshaun Davis, -2.6 at Oregon State and 81.4, you know, points per 100 possession offensive efficiency rating. Like, those are your guards, and you don't have anybody that's even close to average on a per possession basis. And that's who you're going to rely on for depth. I just don't buy, you know, this team here. Now, I could buy Stevenson as a low usage kind of depth piece because he grades out well defensively. He's not going to have to carry anything, you know, behind Cam and Tolu. So I'd buy a little bit on Tyler Stevenson. I think if Will McNair is still kind of a role guy for them, I think they've got some pieces there, but I just don't buy the guard depth here. I don't think they have good guards. And I'm usually in lockstep with Sam that your guard play drives so much of what you do. And I just don't think they've got good guards. And I don't know if you look beyond counting stats, how you can conclude that Chris Jans has a decent backcourt here to really push for seventh or eighth, like I've seen some people pick them.
Well, and this sort of gets to like an overarching point that I almost feel like we could have a whole separate podcast on and talk about, but we could talk about how great of a college basketball coach Chris Jans is, but who is he out coaching in the SEC?
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And I think like this speaks to like the quality of coaches, and really like when you're right now, when you're a team that's in the bottom half, and these are all the teams that we're talking about, all these guys are good basketball coaches. They've proven it at other levels. But are you beating out Bruce Pearl? Are you beating out Rick Barnes? Are you beating out John Calipari? Are you beating out, I'm not really ready to put Nate Oates in that category yet, but Alabama's been winning. Under Nate Oates, they're at worst a 500 team. And if that's what you're talking about as like a baseline, are you a better coach than XYZ? And it's just like there's so many good coaches in this league that you can think somebody is a great coach. And this kind of transitions right into our next team, which is Ole Miss. And I think Kermit is a really great basketball coach. What he did at Mid-Tennessee State, he built that into they were a powerhouse for their league. Like, that's difficult to do. But you move to the SEC and things are different. And really, like, that's the challenge of a lot of high major programs right now, is being able to just identify, like, where you are in the pecking order, how you can move up, how far you can expect to move up. Because, like, I don't really see, like, if you're looking at the top four teams in the SEC, for me, is Kentucky, Tennessee, Arkansas, and Auburn, four best teams. You can pretty much put them in the top five spots every year, probably for the next 3 or 4 years, and be comfortable doing that. Maybe somebody else can kind of sneak up, but that's like who of those four are you beating out? And I think when we're talking about like Ole Miss, I love Ole Miss's talent. It's a talented team. I haven't seen Kermit put it all together yet.
Yeah.
So, like, who is Ole Miss moving past? If Kermit hasn't done it yet, is he going to do it this year? And who are they moving past to get there? Are they moving past Jerry Stackhouse, who, again, like, we know is a good basketball coach? I mean, our friend Blake will tell you how good of a basketball coach Dennis Gates is. Like, are you going to move past Dennis Gates? So, like, yeah, but you kind of get to my point here as we move to Ole Miss, is like where are we at? And I think like that's the challenge for a lot of these programs that are in the bottom right now, is recognizing that you're going to have to get creative if you want to even sniff the top four.
I'll interrupt Blake here, but I'll be quick. I think the hope right now is that Florida and LSU slip. I think that's really your hope, is that, you know, Todd Golden doesn't, you know, transfer the way that I think a lot of national pundits think he will, and that, you know, Matt McMahon is more Steve Prohm than he is, you know, Mick Cronin. You know, that he's got that those guys, that he's not, you know, he's not a good coach coming off that conveyor belt. LSU has shown it can bottom out. Florida, you know, usually manages to be, you know, top eight or so. But I think the hope is, if you're one of those teams that, you know, behind, you know, if we're really looking at, you know, the pecking order that of A&M, Florida, and LSU, you're really hoping two of those teams underwhelm and have some slippage and really create two spots, and that your model of building gets you there. I mean, to me, that's where I think you are. But I think Blake's probably got something more nuanced on that
point. No, I don't, because I think, look, someone of this group of coaches is not going to succeed. Like, it's just reality. Like, someone is not going to, you know, probably meet the expectations people think they are. And that, again, is why I think this particular season in the SEC is so fascinating. And to take it to the Ole Miss point, like, I think it's a fascinating season for Ole Miss, because this is kind of the year, I feel like. It's like, well, if, you know, can you make that jump and sort of be able to kind of, like you mentioned, Sam, it's like, I think you're going to see the same four or five teams maybe in the same top four or five spots, just maybe in a different order over the next however many years, as long as those coaches are there. And, you know, I think it's just, how do you get ahead and be able to say, all right, well, I'm going to move ahead of that guy and move ahead of that guy. I think that's the challenge, because as long as Calipari, Barnes, Muss, Pearl, even Nate Oates, you know, other guys are there. Buzz, I don't think Buzz is going to have a team that's just going to completely, you know, bottom out. So, I mean, like, these are the guys you're competing against. And I think now it's for, like, Ole Miss. I look at their roster this year, really like Ruffin, really like Merle, but, like, beyond that, I think there's good talent there. But is it, compared to all the other teams, enough to be able to push those teams, you know, in the top half? I don't know about that. And I think that's kind of where we are with Ole Miss, where I feel like they're there with the opportunity to move forward, but I just don't know if they necessarily have the roster this season to actually take that big step.
Initially, I didn't like this roster, but then the more I dug into Akwuba and guys like McInnes and Mabala, I thought he did a really nice job sort of going into the front court and getting good defensive bigs. Robert Allen's going to be back. And Jamin Brakefield's a long kind of athletic dude who skews more towards a wing, but I think he's got, you know, in a lot of ways, guys that remind me of what he had at Middle Tennessee, which is long dudes that want to defend that will get into you. And I know over time, Kermit kind of, you know, went away from the 1-3-1 as his base, but I really feel like this is a roster that he can, you know, sort of like Mike White, get back to his roots a little bit and defensively. And, you know, this team was not good defensively a year ago, whether that had to do a lot with injuries and continuity not being there. But that's Kermit's meal ticket, is getting his guys to defend. And if he can get this group to defend, I think it's going to give itself a chance. You know, Dacian Ruffin, I think, you know, is going to be better off now that he's sort of, you know, solo going to be able to run the point there. Morrell really came on down the stretch. You know, Brakefield shows some flashes. I think Fagan understands that he's, you know, kind of that secondary, you know, off the bench kind of combo guy. Allen seems fine in his role. You know, the question to me is what they're going to do at the four, at the five spot. Do they want to play Malik Ewan, you know, a top 100 kid, or do you want to go with kind of a bully ball center in McInnes? You know, I think he's got pieces. It's just, I don't know what he's going to do. Is he going to keep trying to do what he's done, which is play a little bit more aggressive man style and occasionally throw in some zone looks just to keep people on their toes? Or, you know, what's it going to look like for him? Because I think when they've played 1-3-1 stuff, I've said it before, I think it's felt more natural to that team and to kind of Kermit's spirit. And I think the defensive numbers have backed that up a little bit. So does Kermit lean into who he was, or does he keep trying to, you know, be a little bit more of a high major guy and make, you know, sort of Ole Miss palatable to recruits? I'm not sure, but there's some talent here if he can leverage it right to get on the bubble. I'm just not sure if Kermit's going to lean into what I think can get it done for him.
So what would surprise you from LSU this year? What on the court product would LSU put forward that would surprise you?
I mean, that's a good question. LSU, I don't know that LSU is a hard team to figure out, because I think that, I mean, again, we know how, like, he basically rebuilt the roster, but he was able to get, you know, an Adam Miller back that obviously at his best, I think, is certainly someone that will help them in a significant way. I think clearly their strength going to be their guard play. Obviously brought in a nice class. They don't play a true road game until next year. That's something else to consider. But I will say this, though. That's the thing with LSU. If you're asking me, what am I most, just interested in right now? Is there a chance this team, starts, 1-7 or something in the SEC? Because they have the toughest, on paper, if we're projecting the best teams, right?
It's a murder.
They have the toughest first half of an SEC schedule. And I know, I'm not trying to go over the top here, but, guys, I don't recall a schedule this tough in terms of their... I need to pull it up here as I'm talking about it. But, it is just... I could see LSU, you know, winning every game they play until December the 28th. And then from there, they may lose to Arkansas, at Kentucky, at A&M, at Alabama, at Arkansas, Tennessee, Auburn, Texas Tech. It's just, they're going to go to Missouri. Their schedule up until probably Mississippi State on February the 8th. That's why I like the on-court product for LSU. They may look great in their non-conference, that's not really that good. But once they get to the SEC schedule, do we just see a complete flip in terms of what their upside is? They got a lot of good players. I like KJ Williams. I think Mawani Wilkinson has a lot of upside if he can kind of break out. Like I said, with Miller, Justice Hill.
We just don't know what you're going to get from Adam Miller. Like, that's kind of tough to expect.
That's the hardest part for me, because it's like, you know, I think he'd be a big piece of the puzzle if you know you're getting something, you know, that you feel like is going to be a consistent presence in the backcourt. But I think my thing is, like, I don't know what to expect in the front court, and that's probably my biggest question with LSU.
KJ Williams, I think, is a guy who I have faith that KJ Williams will translate. Kendall Coleman, you know, the underlying numbers look really good. I think he's a good depth piece for them. You know, Wilkinson was supposed to be a guy who was an on-ball stopper, but the defensive numbers have never really looked good for him when he's really had to play heavy minutes. To me, it feels like, you know, Justice Hill and Trey Hannibal were really great in the OVC. They were kind of middling. Justice Hill didn't even get court time at Arkansas, had to go to a JUCO. Trey Hannibal was kind of middling for South Carolina, and now they're going to come to LSU and they're going to elevate this team. They're going to elevate that backcourt. You know, if that doesn't happen, then you're relying on Cam Hayes, who was hit or miss at North Carolina State. Tyrell Ward, who's a five-star kid, but not a point guard, more of a wing. You know, if there's any sort of hiccup with the backcourt, it feels like this thing could fall apart pretty quickly. You know, I think individually you look at some of these pieces and you go, well, they were successful at Murray last year. And, you know, Adam Miller had a really great stretch, you know, for parts of his freshman year. But, man, it just feels like one or two pieces not working. And this thing can get on the wrong side pretty quickly, in part because of that schedule you were talking about. I think, you know, we can talk about Missouri here in a minute. But I feel like Missouri and LSU are kind of in that same way, where I can see the blueprint, I can see the pieces and say, okay, if things go well, this, you know, could pan out and there could be something here. But for both of those teams, for Missouri and LSU, the stretch from mid-December into late January, both of them just have absolutely brutal stretches in there, where if things get a little bit sideways, you can get wrong-sided pretty quickly. So I think that's just my thing for there. It feels like everyone's sort of downgrading the risk of what could happen if just a couple things don't hit for them.
So Blake, getting back to your picks, the last team that we haven't talked about yet that you have behind Missouri in your picks, I had them slightly ahead of Missouri. Most people, I think, nationally tend to think that you know, Texas A&M is going to sort of ride the wave after that NIT run and work their way back into the NCAA tournament. I'm a little skeptical about that, mainly because I thought that they really used Quentin Jackson as a catalyst for their offense through that stretch. They do bring back Tyrese Bradford, Henry Coleman, Manny Obaseki, Wade Taylor comes back after he kind of edged out Hassan Diarra a little bit out of the point guard. But from what I can tell, Buzz Williams has 15 scholarship players. And I don't, like, there's only so many minutes that are going to go around. I'm guessing that they got like a waiver for Dexter Dennis. And who is my other? I thought maybe there was a guy who was an in-state commitment. Was it Eric Pratt? I think he's the JUCO kid. I don't know how they worked out these numbers, but like, just getting commitments all over the place. There's a lot of names, and there's guys that, like, I don't know, like, we all want to trust Buzz Williams. But again, like, you know, is Buzz Williams, you know, better than some of the guys at the top of the league? Well, I don't think so. And he's got a worse roster. And so I think they're going to be fine. What's your take on A&M, Blake?
Yeah, no one has more options, just given the numbers. He's got a lot of options on this roster, I'll give you that. So, I think this will be a great defensive team, because, I mean, I think, you know, we kind of know what to expect from Buzz Williams' teams at this point, and I think he's built a roster here that he will love defensively, you know, because, I mean, what I looked up the number was, I think they finished top 30 in turnover percentage defense in every season he's been there. Which is, again, that's what you expect from Buzz teams. I think just the fact that some of those young guys played a bit last season will help. You know, whether that's a Taylor or, I mean, it to me, like, guys, it's got to be Manny Obaseki season, because he's got to be more than he was last year. But again, I'm not saying that to be unfair to him, as he didn't have to be because they had Quentin Jackson. But like now, I think this is the spot if they're going to be able to, you know, be a surefire NCAA tournament team. I think they got to get a lot out of him, and they're high on him. Like I think they believe they will get a lot out of him. And you know, then I think again, you're talking about that combo of Taylor and Radford and, you know, Dennis, I think will certainly help them on the defensive side too. Curious to see what his role is offensively with them. Coleman inside. I mean, he's, you know, he can kind of be your leader, obviously, you know, for sure in the front court. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And then you've got some of those guys like, you know, I don't know, an Anderson Garcia or, you know, Julius Marble and guys like that, that I can't say I really know what to expect from them on this particular team, but I think these are guys with talent. And, you know, even a Solomon Washington, I think, you know, he's a freshman, but I think these are all guys that you look at and like, okay, this team's got those pieces because like I said, we can go 15 deep here and talking about how many people are on the roster. But I wonder if I'm just discounting A&M a little bit because quite frankly, I know in my picks that we did, like I said, a month and a half ago, I would probably put A&M ahead of Missouri right now. But I just think that a lot of that is dependent on the growth of Obaseki. And I think just kind of seeing what the rotation looks like because they got a lot of options. It's just, I'm more curious probably offensively about this team because I think they're going to be great defensively.
Yeah. I think Dennis is going to be another nice addition for them defensively. Marble's got, you know, time in the Big Ten. He's a guy who also hits the board pretty well. I think Garcia can give them something defensively. Buzz is going to try and rehabilitate KK Robinson after Muss, you know, hit him somewhere, put him in a monastery. I don't know, but KK Robinson didn't see the floor in Fayetteville, and that's a former top 100 kid. So maybe he rehabilitates him, but I just don't know if I trust Buzz to get a program somewhere because of what he did at Marquette and Virginia Tech. But I look at, you know, when he got there, it was supposed to be Hassan Diarra is going to be this point guard that, you know, gets them over the top and didn't happen. You know, Andre Gordon, you know, had squeezed him out near the end. And, you know, then last year, Quentin Jackson, you know, Wade Taylor, you know, he was just getting passed. And you're like, okay, this cornerstone at the point's not there. And then they brought in Jackson Robinson. And even if Robinson reclassified and played young, he didn't even make it, you know, more than 2 years there. And now, you know, Manny Obaseki is supposed to be the guy that's going to come in and be this kind of next elevated piece for them on the wing. You know, I'm just waiting to see a cornerstone that Buzz brings in from the prep market, you know, turn into what, you know, we think he's going to turn into. And he kind of needs that because if he doesn't have a primary scorer, this is going to be a team that's going to have to try and spackle stuff together every night. And we've seen what happens when they try and do that. They can maybe catch a little bit of a run late, but there's going to be a 6-7-8 game stretch in the middle of the year where I think they just really struggle to score. And, you know, until they have some sort of certainty and some sort of reliability offensively, it's just hard for me to say, yeah, move them into the top six, put them in the NCAA tournament. So it's wait and see with them, because I just don't think they have anybody on this roster that they've imported who you can just sort of say, yeah, that's the focal point for them offensively. I think Coleman and Radford are nice second and third pieces, but I'm like you guys. I don't necessarily see like a alpha here who can take this team up a notch.
Well, if you go to youtube.com, you can look up Southeastern 14 and you can
45 minutes of priming the pump.
See Blake's lovely smiling face with your, what's your co-host name?
Chris Lee.
You both do a nice job. 6 days ago, you guys posted your Missouri season preview, which included Blake gushing about his guy, Dennis Gates. So now let's talk quickly about Missouri. There's reason to be skeptical of Missouri. Like, things for Mizzou haven't really worked out all that much since they got to the SEC. Obviously, there's a lot of excitement right now for this team. A lot of it revolves around Isaiah Mosley and sort of his ability to score. They have some proven ball handling with Sean East and Nick Honor, guys who don't really turn the ball over that much. You know, and some guys that have proven they can hit shots. So I'm a little surprised to see certain national writers pick them as low as I've seen them in some cases. But I also feel like the sort of like 9 to 11 range is completely fair based upon sort of how you see, you know, the pieces fit. Blake, you had them at 8th. I have them at 9th. Matt, I think actually you had them at 10th. I can pull that up to be certain.
Yeah, I got him.
Yeah, initially at 10th. But we're all kind of in the same range that Missouri is going to be better. What will it take for Missouri to not just be better, but to get themselves into the bubble conversation?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, and like you said, I obviously have fun with the Dennis Gates stuff at this point. But like it's just a matter of, I feel like you see how quickly he's put this roster together. And I think I'd said this to Sam probably before we started recording, but it's like, I feel like some of the national people maybe are just forgetting or not giving enough credit to the addition of Isaiah Mosley and like what that can actually do for this team versus if you take him off this roster. Obviously, I think my expectations change a bit, but the fact that he is on this roster and you now have a piece to work with offensively that presents a different skill set, you know, than the other guys on the roster, I just think that's an exciting possibility in year one for a coach that is built what I think, like I said, I think it's an NCAA tournament caliber roster. I'm not saying they'll get there, but I think it's one that if everything kind of comes together, and again, we always say there will be a couple guys that you think may be, you know, much better than you would expect that just wind up don't translating to the SEC and maybe the style of play that they have to go through on a 9-in-9-out basis. But for the most part here, guys, I look at this when you have a Mosley, you have a Kobe Brown. You know, I even think there should be a lot of optimism for what even a guy like Nick Honor, who I don't think as well is not probably not getting enough just because I don't think his numbers are probably sexy enough for some people. But this is a guy who takes care of the ball. Like, that's important. Like, just take care of the ball. Like, you need a guy that can do that. And so I think when you look, like, there was clearly a very strategic approach, which every coach should have, to how they put this roster together. Because I think there's all those different pieces that, okay, this guy doesn't have to be great at everything. He just needs to be great at this. And, like, I think when you look at some of the guys on this roster, sure, you've got some versatility there, but you've got a lot of guys, I think, that fit different roles really, really well. And again, it's always a chemistry thing in the transfer era. And does everything kind of come together? But when you factor in that, you know, guys like Sean East, Noah Carter, Trago Million, you know, Des Moines Hodge, I think can be a scorer. You know, Shaw, all those different guys. I just think that I find this roster to be better to me on paper, and not you take out the Dennis Gates equation. Which I'm still going to give him a little extra boost for that. But I just find it better than a lot of the rosters we've talked about to this point. Maybe not every one of them, but I just think the roster has come together a bit better than even maybe I would have expected in year one.
I think, you know, when we go through, and obviously we're, you know, partisan and we, you know, talk about this team ad nauseum, but I think objectively, you know, when I started watching how Dennis played at Cleveland State and I was like, okay, you know, kind of to the discussion we've had about Mike White and you know, Kermit Davis, you know, what was going to happen when he got hired here. And the one thing that, you know, strikes me is that he's still, I think, you know, playing or could play in a way that made him successful at Cleveland State. It's still the skill sets that he wants in guys and that he values are still here. But now you've elevated it with a guy like Isaiah Mosley. Now you've got guys who I think, you know, at certain positions are a little bit better than what he, you know, could have had at Cleveland State. You know, like I think of you know, our buddy Matt Watkins loves Isaiah Mosley. I'm a huge, you know, Noah Carter fan just because I think if you watch how Noah Carter plays, if you take away any of the statistical production, or if you watch how Dennis Gates' teams play at Cleveland State and then you put on Northern Iowa games, there are stretches where it looks like Noah Carter could just be transposed between the screens. He just fits what he does there. You know, if you watch, you know, how Nick Honor plays, you know, in terms of how he can, you know, initiate and move off the ball. Same with Sean East. That's a lot of what Dennis Gates had to do last year when they didn't really have a true point. Like, I think to me, the biggest thing that makes me optimistic about this roster, aside from the talent, is just it looks like it was built in a way where everything sort of interlocks logically. And again, yep, you know, up transfers can hit or miss. You know, I get the questions about Noah Carter and his size defensively. I get the question about, you know, can Mosley's efficiency really scale up? You know, Sean East, We've watched him play a lot of Division I basketball, and he was an average point guard at the mid-major level. But does that change if he's just got to become a secondary kind of guy and a roster piece here? You know, Nick Honor is not a guy who is flashing in any way. But the question to me is, does the whole really fit together? And I think it does in a way that, you know, I don't think I have them, I wouldn't put them higher than eighth in the pecking order. But I think if you're talking about things going well and if everything hits, they can get on the bubble and they can maybe make a case, you know, for a 10 or 11 seed come March. But I think to really value this roster, you really sort of have to dig in deep and you really have to sort of go through it. And, you know, the thing about it is when we go through and, you know, take a granular look at these other rosters, I'm just not sure I see the same degree of fit at places like I do here. You know, I think Mississippi State, there's been some compromises. I think LSU is probably the closest that I get to it. Florida's got some nice returning assets, but I think if you're going to ask me kind of what the best, you know, fit between transfer guys, returners, and scheme is, I still think Dennis has it. Will it work out? I don't know, but I think that's something that's heartening to see, is that I think he's got a good vision and he's managed to execute that pretty quickly.
Yeah, so we definitely have a conundrum with Missouri. We still have a whole top half of the league to kind of get to. And seeing as how we are at, I think, right around 50-something minutes on this podcast already, I think what we're going to do is we're going to just pause and we're going to try to do a part two later in the week and talk about the rest of the league. We can also maybe get more. We'll put Blake on the couch and get more of his deep, intense feelings for Coach Gates. But Blake, before we get out of here, is there anything that you want to plug?
Oh, I appreciate you guys as always. Like you said, Southeastern 14 on YouTube. You can check out all of our SEC basketball team previews we've been doing, just like you guys have. Yeah, a lot of SEC football stuff there as well. We'll have all of our, like I said, we're going to have our preseason rankings coming up. Actually, they should be out either on Wednesday or Thursday. And we're going to do our top, I don't remember what the number is. We've got top 25 or top 30 player rankings heading into the season, which will be a lot of fun. We've certainly put a lot of hours into that. And let me tell you, that's not as thrilling of an exercise you would think, trying to figure out where to put some of these guys. But we'll have all that up there. And yeah, everything else, I'm on Twitter at the Blake Lovell.
So give Blake a follow if you aren't already. If you're listening to this podcast and not following Blake, like, what are you even doing? As many times we've had this lovely man on. So, Blake, we'll talk to you in a few days, and we'll finish out the rest of the SEC. So go ahead and let you hang up, and I appreciate your coming by. We'll talk to you soon. And so, Matt, you and I are going to wrap up. Anything that you want to say before we get out of here?
No, just other than I'm excited that we're going to have real basketball again next week, and hopefully people have enjoyed the stuff that's come up on the site. We are coming to the end of the player preview series. We've, I think, put out 36 minutes of film, and we've put out a lot of words and a lot of data trying to get people accustomed to this roster. So I hope people have checked those out. And hope people are following your assiduous efforts to profile all the SEC basketball teams that we're going to see this year. It's been a lot of previewing. And next week it becomes reality and we get to see just how wrong we actually are.
Oh man, I cannot wait for actual basketball, but what we'll do is we'll come back in a couple days and kind of wrap this SEC preview with Blake. So with all that being said, thanks everybody for tuning in. If you enjoyed this podcast, make sure you're subscribed to our podcast feed wherever you download and listen to your podcast, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Google Play Store. We are also on Spotify. So if you're a Spotify subscriber, you can log right into there and listen to our pod. If you are subscribed, you get episodes of Before the Box Score. The Dad Pod has wrapped up. It's now back to Nate and BK. So those are all beamed directly into your phone. You can listen to them dissect everything about Mizzou football. Exciting game coming up this weekend, Mizzou and Kentucky. So hopefully Tigers can kind of keep that positive momentum going. So we'll be back in a couple days. You can give Matt a follow if you need to in the meantime, at MattJHarris85. You can follow me at Sam P. Snelling. And then we will talk to you in a few days as we talk about the top half of the SEC. So until then, thanks for tuning in.